Scan, and the crowd say Radio Yorkshire. Scan, and the crowd say Radio Yorkshire. I do like a good rescan. Go on, fiddle with me knobs. Pop on to radioyorkshire.co.uk/rescan.
Now, as we've already mentioned earlier in the show, Leeds United owner Massimo Cellino has been fined €40,000 for the non-payment of taxes due on a Range Rover. That's according to reports in Italy. The National Court of Cagliari issued a judgment this morning with a fine issue for failing to pay €16,000 in taxes on that vehicle. Cellino was acquitted of customs offences because estimates of the Range Rover's value fell below the threshold of criminal liability. Cellino's Range Rover was bought from Miami to Sardinia in 2010 on a tourist visa and was seized by customs in 2012. Now, it remains to be seen what stance the Football League take following the offence, which Cellino fined €600,000 last year for failing to pay import duty on a yacht. Earlier today, I caught up with Alan Darfey from Front Row Legal, a sports law firm based in Leeds, and here is what he had to say on the matter.
The amount is a lot less. The concern for Cellino and Leeds United will be that although the amount is less, it may well still be found that the offence was one of dishonesty. And as we all know from the previous case involving Cellino and Leeds, that was the finding which really had a serious outcome for him and the club.
So it's not really the amount of money he's been fined, it's the word dishonesty really that's the key here.
Yeah, definitely. The Football League based their previous decision, which of course was relating to the boat and their decision to suspend Mr. Cellino, on the finding that it was dishonest. Obviously, it's very similar territory. The allegations, which are now apparently found proven in an Italian court, that he didn't pay the VAT element. There can be various different reasons for that. One of those could be dishonesty, and it will be interesting to see if that is the finding of the Italian court.
What does this mean for Leeds United then?
I think a lot depends on that outcome. Obviously, if it is found to be something dishonest, then the Football League will obviously have to review that and will probably consider taking similar action. We're obviously aware that he now has previous for this, although he did appeal against it, and I believe there's still an ongoing Rule KFA arbitration. There is previous. Any findings from the Football League will take that into consideration. It's certainly going to be worrying for Leeds. You would think that if the outcome is that it was dishonest, that they'd be looking at the very least, a similar sort of suspension. Obviously, with the previous there, you could well expect there to be more. I think a lot of the problems from last time, at least following the decision, came because there was this allegation that they didn't disclose documents. Again, I think it will be interesting to see how Cellino, Leeds and the lawyers deal with this case this time around.
The fact that he has got previous, does that make it more troublesome for Cellino and Leeds United?
I think it has to. I think any decision reached by the Football League, they will obviously, once they've found, if they find that he's guilty of whatever charges they issue, they will ask for a previous record. And if there is a previous record there, which is extremely similar, from my experience of panels, that's usually your entry point, unless there's serious mitigation or the cases are very dissimilar. So it will obviously be taken into consideration. And of course, there is also a third case, which is due in, I believe, October for a boat. They have to be concerned. They can't avoid the fact that there is previous, there is now this second case, and there is potentially a third case as well coming.
The fact it's three cases, does that mean the Football League can take a decision where they can say enough is enough, we can strike Cellino off and not let him own a football club in this country for good?
I think the Football League's powers are obviously quite wide. They do have a wide range of decisions that they could reach. I think to permanently suspend someone would be extremely draconian. However, you just don't know. You just don't know how they will view this. If it comes, if it transpires that, you know, Mr. Chelino has been saying these other cases are completely irrelevant, nothing was likely to happen, and then it transpires that there were two more dishonesty, the Football League won't take kindly to that. Again, it will be interesting to see how any charges, if we get to that point, are defended, and they'll take that into consideration. You just can't tell. You just can't tell. I think we're in territory that we haven't really crossed before.
Is a permanent suspension possible, though? Is that in the remit of the Football League? Could they feasibly do that?
I believe it's within their powers. I mean, that would obviously need to be confirmed. Whether they would get to that position or not is a question for the panel, and just simply can't be answered without knowing the full facts.
And what sort of... I know it's very early, and I appreciate that, but what sort of timescale are we looking at with the Football League looking at this? Could we know in weeks, or is it more likely to be months?
Well, just based on the previous case, they obviously need to await the outcome of the judgment. They can't do anything until they see that, because, as we've mentioned, they need to see if anything dishonest has happened. As we've said, there are various reasons for not paying VAT, and one of those may well be something other than dishonesty. However, once they get that judgment, if that's in there, they can then make decisions. And I think they will probably try and act quite quickly. The issue will be getting that judgment, because it did take some time last time. Obviously, we had the issues with Leeds United and Chelino being accused of not disclosing those. So they may well put the pressure on those parties to disclose that based on the previous experience. A lot will depend on just how long it takes to get the judgment. Once we get that, I think things could move quite quickly. In terms of the time frame, obviously, we're heading towards the start of the season. Nobody will want this hanging over anybody. Everybody will be trying to get this on quickly. I'm not sure whether we'll be able to get to that position before the start of the season, just based on the previous experience from how long it took to get the judgment.
Leeds United Live on Radio Yorkshire.
Tony DiRico alongside me. From when you've got, you know, a really good team and a really good squad of people with the right mentality, you know, if one or two step out of line, the players sort them out. We sort them out before it gets to the manager, before it gets to the owner. Here, my God, I don't know what's going on.
Uninterrupted full match commentary of every Leeds United game, home and away. This is Radio Yorkshire. The bigger picture on Radio Yorkshire.
First, let's have a look at what's going on in the Copa America in Chile. That's because the quarterfinals get underway in the early hours of Thursday morning in the UK. And the draw's thrown up some absolute crackers. Joining us to preview all of the action is South American football expert Nick Dorrington. Nick, good evening. How are you doing?
Good evening. I'm all right, thanks. And you?
Excellent, thank you. Looking forward to the quarterfinals of the Copa America. We're going to talk about them shortly. But first of all, how much of a spectacle has the competition been so far?
Well, I think it's been a very good tournament so far. I mean, all of the games have been quite tightly contested. We've only had two that have had a winning margin of more than one goal. But at the same time, it's only been 1-0. So I think it's been a good display of sort of the strength and depth of South America. And even sort of the highly fancied teams haven't found it easy against some of the lesser teams in the region. So I think it's been a good tournament so far.
Everyone looks forward to seeing the likes of Brazil and Argentina. But what about the other sides? Has anyone stood out for you? Anyone impressed you in particular?
Well, we've had a few. Like, for instance, Peru have done very well to get through the group. They were in a group with Brazil, Colombia and Venezuela. And they've done very well to go through in second from that group. Very, very impressed with them. And Bolivia also. They lost 5-0 to Argentina in a friendly before the tournament and looked terrible. But somehow managed to get through. They drew with Mexico and then beat Ecuador. So both of those two teams have done incredibly well to get through, alongside some of the more normal names that we expect from the World Cup.
And Nick, looking at the Copa America, just how tight it's been. I mean, I watched the Argentina versus Jamaica game and they only won 1-0, and in that last minute they were basically holding up play, just trying to get over the line. It just shows you how tight this competition's been.
Yeah, it really has been in Jamaica as well. I mean, they lost all three of their games, but to only lose 1-0 to Uruguay, Paraguay and Argentina, that's a fairly good showing considering that no one was expecting, people were expecting them to be the whipping boys before the tournament. So has even they have, you know, done well. So yeah, there's been no team that's really been outright terrible.
Let's have a look at the quarterfinals then. They get underway 12:30 on Thursday morning UK time. We've got Chile v Uruguay to start off, an absolute cracker.
Yeah, this should be a good one. I mean, I think if Chile wanted to avoid anyone, you know, outside of Argentina and Brazil in the quarterfinals, it was probably Uruguay. Uruguay have knocked the hosts out of each of the last two Copa Americas at the quarterfinal stage. And I think they're a team, I mean, they're lacking Suarez, obviously he's suspended, and Diego Forlán has retired. So they're not quite as, you haven't got quite as much attacking firepower as they usually have. But, I mean, in defence still, they're very hard to break down. And this year, there's actually going to be no extra time in the quarterfinals and semis. So it's quite possible. I mean, you could see Uruguay holding Chile for 90 minutes to go to penalties. It's not out of the question. So I think this should be a really good start to the quarterfinals.
No extra time, so straight to penalties after 90 minutes. That sounds pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's necessarily going to, you know, convince the likes of Uruguay. Obviously, you've got Chile and Paraguay, you've got Brazil, to play any sort of expansive football, knowing that they just need to hold on for 90 minutes. But, yeah, it should make things interesting in the final 10-15 minutes of these games.
Certainly should make it very interesting. On Friday, we've got Bolivia v Peru. A lot of people in the UK might not know too much about these sides. What are you expecting from this one?
This one's quite an interesting one. It's hard to judge, really, because Bolivia, as I say, did very well to get out of the group. But then they did lose 5-0 to Chile in their final group game once they were already through. Now, that could have just been that, you know, with nothing to play for, in theory, they kind of relaxed a little bit. And Chile, obviously, are a very good side. But it's kind of hard to call this one. I'd say Peru are the favourites, but both of their normal central midfielders are suspended for this one. So it's hard to call on that one. I'd say Peru, but I expect it to be a tight game.
And the next game after that is Argentina against Colombia. I mean, that one, the way that Argentina have won their matches, it's still going to be a very, very good game. And obviously, you'll have the likes of Falcao trying to prove his worth to his new club, Chelsea.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite interesting because I don't know, you know, any Chelsea fans who've watched the Copa America are probably wondering what on earth they're doing going after Falcao. I think the problem for Colombia is, well, one, Falcao doesn't look at all sharp. And then two, during the World Cup when Falcao was injured, they kind of were a lot more fluid in the way they played. James Rodriguez was able to get on the ball more often in dangerous areas. Whereas with Falcao, they kind of have to play someone up top alongside him, and then they're a bit more rigid in their setup. So, I mean, this again should be a cracking game. I think you'd fancy Argentina, even though they haven't really got out of first or second gear yet. But at the same time, when you've got players of the quality they've got, you think it's going to have to click properly at some point. I'd fancy Colombia, like Peru, actually have got both of their two normal central midfielders out of this one. I think Argentina should take this, but I think that's probably going to be the most even and most attractive of the quarterfinal ties.
And then if those three weren't enough, the other quarterfinal, Brazil v Paraguay. Now, we all know that Neymar is out of the competition through suspension. At the World Cup, when they lost him, they were pretty terrible, Brazil. Are they coping better this time?
They did actually, in their last game against Venezuela. They were more, obviously Neymar is above the quality of the players who came in for him, but as a collective, they played in a way that wasn't so much focused on just getting the ball to Neymar. There was kind of more interplay between the attacking midfielders. I mean, obviously they're going to miss Neymar, but I don't think, well, certainly Paraguay aren't a side of the same quality as Germany. I don't think you're going to see a complete collapse because Neymar's not in the team. But at the same time, I don't know. Paraguay have been pretty good so far. Before the tournament, actually, Jose Chilava, the ex-national team goalkeeper, called the coach Ramon Diaz a layabout who only came for the money. But I think he's kind of proved him wrong a bit in this tournament. Paraguay have been quite good. They're sort of got a boxy 4-4-2. it's quite simple, their style of play, but, you know, they've done well, come undefeated from the group stage, and I think they'll give Brazil a good game.
Now, a lot of people look at the Copa America. It's that big pool of talent over there in South America, and people want to know who the next Ronaldinho, the next Ronaldo is. What, out of the players that we've seen so far, some of which, like Roberto Firmino, have been linked with Premier League clubs, who's catching the eye and who could be about to make a move across to Europe in the summer?
Well, it's hard to say. There's not really like a huge amount of sort of the younger... The problem is European clubs sign up all the best talent, kind of, you know, if they show well in youth tournaments, and they're usually signed up pretty quickly. So we haven't got any sort of, you know, like 20-year-olds here that no one's heard of who are suddenly going to explode. But there is a few based in South America I think are probably due a move. One of them is Charles Aránguiz, the midfielder of Chile, who scored 2 goals already in this tournament. Very energetic midfielder, gets up and down. I could see him doing well in Spain or indeed in England. Other than that, we've kind of had, I don't know, there's not been a huge amount of those really sort of the unknown players who've really stepped up. Christian Cueva of Peru has been quite good, attacking midfielder. He's had a bit of a wayward career to this point, but he seems to be getting focused. And then maybe the goalkeeper of Bolivia, Romel Quiñones. He's still got a few mistakes in him. He's only 22, but he's a very commanding goalkeeper. His distribution's good. He could be one who, you know, in the future could make a move to Europe.
And looking at the group stages, the big names, the likes of Arturo Vidal, Alexis Sanchez, Lionel Messi, would you say that they've all delivered so far?
I think it's hard with Messi because he kind of still gives the impression sometimes that he's got enough quality that he doesn't really have to turn it on during, you know, in the group stage. It wasn't a necessity for him to turn it on. I mean, I think we saw during the back end of last season of Barcelona that obviously he's very much capable of turning it on, you know, at the sort of back end of tournaments. So I expect him to sort of come to life a bit more in the knockout stages. Vidal and Sanchez have been seen two of Chile's better players. Vidal especially has performed really well. So I think most of the big players have performed. Aguero also has been very sharp for Argentina. So, I think it's a tournament where, Neymar aside, the big guns are performing.
And finally, Nick, looking at the quarterfinals, which are taking place between Thursday and Saturday, from what you've seen so far and the draw that's been made, who do you think is going to win this year's Copa America?
It's very tough. I think if you're looking at it from group stage performances and, in fact, what would make the best final, I think Chile-Argentina would be a great final, and probably actually looking at the draw is the most likely. I'd like to say Chile. They've never won a major international tournament, so, you know, they see this as their big chance to do so. I think I'm going to go with Chile. I'd like to see the host nation do it.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for joining us here on Radio Yorkshire, Nick, and enjoy the rest of the tournament.
Will do. It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Radio Yorkshire. Right now, we're fair to Midland.
What a strange end to a song. Fall Out Boy there. Uma Thurman. Another band that we've not heard of for a while. Bringing you all the hits here on Radio Yorkshire.
Yeah, I love having that back. It was like with The Darkness and Fall Out Boy, yeah. Bands that I thought had fallen by the, you know, I'd not heard of them.
Coming up in the second hour, Nickelback.
Oh! Wow.
You know.
There you go.
My old Nokia. I used to get them Bluetooth to me from friends and get 2 songs.
Could be a new slogan. Give the public what they used to like or used to want. Anyway, England's cricketers have finished their batting innings against New Zealand in the T20 International. Finished up with 191 for 7. Joe Root, top scorer in Yorkshire's Joe Root, seems to boss all forms of cricket at the moment. Stokes had in some very important runs at the end as well. So 192 the target that New Zealand need. 9.6 runs per over. Going to be a tough one, and we'll keep you updated throughout the show here on Radio Yorkshire. It's time to quickly do this.
Transfer tittle tattle on Radio Yorkshire.
Come on then, lads, what have you got for me? Transfer tittle-tattle time.
How about this? A bit of breaking news. Arsenal have agreed a £10.9 million fee with Chelsea for Petr Cech.
Oh,
£10.9 million.
There you go.
It doesn't seem that much money, does it, for a player of his calibre?
I mean, he is someone who is... Basically, Arsenal, in my opinion, have gone from a team that I would say, yeah, they'll get Champions League football. I would now say they're title contenders based on this signing.
Very interesting. I've got a brilliant one here as well. Andrea Pirlo in talks to join Frank Lampard and David Villa at New York City. He's got a year left on his Juventus contract, but has told them he wants to be released early. So looks like Pirlo's heading to the States.
Oh, well, I've got another interesting one from you from across the channel. It looks like Marseille could be in for youngster Charlie Musonda. It's going to be an interesting one for Marseille. They need to get rid of a few players by the end of the month because they're in quite a financial mess, but only signing him on loan, which will probably help them out on the wage bill side.
Liverpool have been busy. They're apparently in talks with three strikers. Roberto Firmino, who plays for Brazil, Carlos Bacca, who plays for Chile, and Solomon Rondon, who's done pretty averagely in Russia, but a very interesting player. They need firepower up front, but three players there with no Premier League experience, probably not what fans will be hoping to hear.
But surely they'll show great character.
Well, at least it'll be better than Balotelli and show outstanding effort.
Watford are in talks to sign two midfielders. Apparently Paulinho, the Tottenham midfielder, he could be going there for a fee less than the £17 million Tottenham paid for him. And also Joey Barton, obviously linked with Leeds United. It looks like Watford have officially made an approach for him. Obviously, he was on £68,000 at QPR. I think he'll be on a bit less there, but he'll be on more money than he would be on at Leeds United.
Anything else, Danny?
Well, it makes it quite interesting with Tottenham because Anthony Martial could be going over to Spurs from Monaco for a big bid of £19 million, and that's for a teenager at the age of 19. A million for every year he's alive.
I wish that was my income.
The Bigger Picture with Billy Banks on Radio Yorkshire.
Welcome back to The Bigger Picture. So let's run through the show so far, lads, because we've got through quite a bit. Latest Leeds United crisis, tick. Copa America quarterfinal preview, big tick. Great interview, that. We talked about some transfer tittle-tattle. That's been done and dusted as well. And now we should probably move on to a little bit of England football chat, because we've got two tournaments that England teams are involved in at the moment. We've got the under-21s out there in the Czech Republic playing in the European Championships, and England's ladies playing in the World Cup. Now, we all watched the game against Norway last night, coming from behind to win 2-1. And, you know, England's ladies... this competition have not really set it alight yet, but when they went behind, they sort of came out of the shell. They were really struggling in the game. Go 1-0 down, and all of a sudden, they look really good. I mean, we can't keep doing this as the tournament goes on, but some very encouraging signs, some high-class football as well.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. They've done very, very well to get this far, matching what they did back in the last World Cup, where they had, for me, a much better team. This one very much feels like... the team, the golden era have gone. They've lost some big players, like that's of Rachel Yankee, that have gone on and retired. And now it seems to be a time of bringing those youngsters together. And unlike the international men's side, they've actually managed to do it with some success.
Well, England's captain, former England's Faye White, believes the success of the national team in the World Cup will inspire more girls to start playing the sports. I mean, that is important. From what I've seen, Tom, girls really are taking up the sport in bigger and bigger numbers. And, you know, we saw it with the Ashes in 2005, the Rugby Union World Cup in 2003 as well. When a team does well, people want to be part of that and want to get more and more involved. And, you know, hopefully that will happen from this. From what you've seen, obviously you follow grassroots football and stuff. Obviously, lads' football always seems to be more popular. What have you seen from girls' football? Does it really seem to be growing?
Yeah, I'd say it does. I covered a match about 3.5 years ago, and the attendance was literally, I'd say it was about 15 people, and it was one of them matches. There were two quite high teams, and I remember thinking women's football, I just naturally assumed it was a bit more popular than it was. Obviously, the Women's Super League has really helped, and the fact that they've got that TV deal where they're getting that coverage and that exposure. You know, Radio Yorkshire, I talk about the Doncaster Rovers Bells whenever they've got a match, because to be honest with you, you know, the standard of football is a very good level, and if you've never gone to see a women's game of football, I think you should, because you'll be surprised. It's very, very good football. And I think the Women's World Cup can only help, you know, them 5, 6, 7, 8-year-old girls who maybe are thinking, should I play football or not? It's a man's sport. Well, no, it's not. You know, women can play this game. And you know what? It's been fantastic to see. And I really do hope participation levels increase now.
Well, former captain Faye White really hopes this continues. And she says the more success the England team have, the more of a positive impact it'll have.
This, I think, can kick it on again and hopefully inspire a lot of young girls to play the game and to change some people's perception still a little bit, who have never watched women's football, because they are getting over 2 million people now view the games on live on telly, and that's a great thing for the women's football.
And it's not just people from the football community. England cricket captain Charlotte Edwards says it's huge to women's sport in general that the footballers have got to the quarterfinals. Edwards has told Sky Sports News that she hopes the footballers can keep up their impressive run.
It's fantastic. I think, you know, I sat and watched it last night and incredibly proud of what the team have achieved, and hopefully they can go one step further and beat Canada.
So good luck to England's women. It's Canada in the next round, the hosts, of course. They're a big women's football nation. They're hosting the competition, so they'll have that brilliant home support. Hopefully they can go on further and get to the next round. We'll wait and see. Let's talk about the under-21s then. Head coach Gareth Southgate's praised his squad for their positive attitude during the European Championship campaign in the Czech Republic. It's Italy tomorrow night, the opponents. It's pretty simple. If they win, it guarantees them a place in the semi-finals. If there's a draw, they could still go through, but there's some complicated maths which I am not going to start trying to work out now. Southgate says the players have set a high standard in training and they need to live up to that.
We've got a group of players whose approach and whose attitude is outstanding. There's tremendous competition for places, so it's not possible to go into a session and underperform. You look completely out of place if you're not somebody that works hard and has the right approach.
Young English players always seems to be an absolute bugbear. It's always, you know, a big problem. People always talking about the fact they're not getting the chance, particularly at the highest level in the game. But when you look at the team, I mean, you'd be forgiven for thinking that most of them would play in the lower leagues. But, you know, you've got 3 Spurs players, you've got 2 Arsenal players, Manchester United, 2 Chelsea players. All the top clubs here, you know, are shown in the England under-21 squad. But I've been thinking about it, and I've actually, you know, printed off the squad and I've been going through it today. The whole point of the under-21s really is to give young players a chance to play international football and sort of get the next batch ready for the senior squad. But when you look at this squad, I'm not convinced that many of these players will make it through to the senior international side. We've all been looking at this, haven't we, throughout the day, lads? And I'll read the squad out. I mean, goalkeepers, Jack Butland, Jonathan Bond, Marcus Bettinelli. I bet a lot of people hadn't heard of Jonathan Bond and Marcus Bettinelli before the competition. Defence, Carl Jenkinson, Luke Garbutt, John Stones, Ben Gibson, Michael Keane, Liam Moore, Callum Chambers and Matt Target. Again, some names in there that won't be too familiar with many people. In the midfield, I mean, I'll be honest, I myself hadn't heard of Jake Forster-Caskey. And you've got Alex Pritchard, James Ward-Prowse, Tom Carroll, Nathan Redmond, Nathaniel Chalabar, Jesse Lingard, Will Hughes and Ruben Loftus-Cheek, who we've heard a lot about, mainly because he plays for Chelsea. And then up front, Harry Kane, Danny Ings and Benny Kofobe. So when you look at the names in that squad, some very recognisable, particularly players like Harry Kane and Yorkshire's John Stones. But beyond that, it's not a star-studded squad. What I gave the lads a task of doing today, I've done this myself, is going through and basically ranking the squad. You know, who can we actually see playing for the England seniors? So we've got a scale. We've got definitely, maybe and no chance. Tom, I'll start with you. What did you make of the squad and what have you sort of ranked them?
Well, I've looked at, obviously, this squad and, you know what, I think, you know, I'm being a bit generous maybe, but I think about half this squad will get into that England setup, this senior setup. I do believe that. The names that really stand out to me are Jack Butland, who in my opinion, will be Stokes' number one.
And he also already has an England cap as well, senior cap.
Already has a senior cap. He's not done anything wrong for Stoke. And what I like about Jack Butland as well, he has a good attitude. When he was sitting on the bench, he said, well, loan me to Barnsley, loan me to Leeds, loan me to all these clubs I want to play. And I think that can only help you when you're in them positions because, you know, Gareth Southgate, I think, will have helped him as well because really he'll reward him for having that attitude. John Stones, if he stays at Everton, I think he's a shoo-in. I'm a bit worried there are reports that he could be going to Chelsea for £30 million, which sounds positive, but then when you work it out, John Terry, if it was this summer, let's say, you've got to say that John Stones wouldn't get into the Chelsea starting back four because basically Kurt Zouma is ahead of him if he joined. The one that stuck out for me and one that I've said is a maybe is Danny Ings. Everyone thinks he's a shoo-in to get into the England squad and to really play a big part for England. I've just got a feeling he could be a player that if the move to Liverpool didn't work out, he could very quickly disappear from the scene. Obviously, he'll be in a position soon where he can't play in the under-21s anymore, so really this is his last chance. And just got a feeling he could be the one where, if it doesn't go right at club level, country-wise, he really will be having problems. But when I look at it, I think there are names there. You know, the likes of Jake Forster-Caskey. I like him. I think he's a very good player. I think he's very talented at Brighton. The problem is making that step up. And yeah. I think with Roy Hodgson especially, you have to be playing in them top divisions to have any chance. And obviously, at the moment, he's at Brighton. So for him to get that, for now, I'd say he's got no chance because I don't think Roy Hodgson will look down to the Championship.
So you think half of those players will play for England? What about your definitelys? How many do you think definitely will play for England? I've got seven players.
Well, I'll go for it. Jack Butland. I think Carl Jenkinson, who obviously is Arsenal, but he's wanted by so many Premier League clubs. West Ham really want him to stay on for a year. I mean, I think he's proven his worth. John Stones, I think that's definite. I've put Callum Chambers. I think he'll get there. Now, this is an interesting one, Matt Target. The way that Southampton have built him up, I think he's got a great chance if he's given game time. Quite simply, at the moment, he ain't playing for Southampton. But I think if he was given a run, I've seen him in under 21 games, he stands out from the crowd. And if he's given that chance, I think he'll do well. James Ward-Prowse, I think will be a future England captain even. I really do. I think I rate him that highly. Fantastic set piece taker, someone who has leadership qualities already. Nathan Redmond, I think he can only develop, he can only get better. And then Will Hughes, I think if he can get a big move soon, he'll do well. And I've said Harry Kane, obviously, because Harry Kane will. And you know what? My final one's Benny Cathobi. I think he's shown again, he's shown that attitude where he wasn't playing for Arsenal. He said, I'll go to MK Dons. He ripped League One apart. He's then gone to the Championship and he's done really well in the months he was at Wolves. And there is already talk that there are teams in for him in the Premier League. So again, I think he's someone who'll have a good year at Wolves and then he'll just develop and move on. I don't think he'll get in the Euro 2016 squad, but I think after that he'll have a chance.
Well, in my definitely column, I've got Jack Butland, obviously, you know, he's already got a cap. Carl Jenkinson, Callum Chambers, you know, plays for Arsenal. He had a difficult start to his spell at Arsenal, but I think he'll come through that a stronger player. John Stones. I've also got Nathan Redmond. I think he'll be playing in the Premier League next year. I think he'll develop at Norwich. Probably a good team to play for because he'll definitely play football. And I've gone, obviously, Harry Kane. He's played and scored for England. And I do think Danny Ings will definitely play for England. Maybe not just because I think he's a good player, but maybe because there aren't that many top England strikers at the moment. So that might give him his chance. What about you, Danny? Do you think many definitelys?
There's not too many, but the ones I have put down, I expect to at least get a couple of caps. So, you know, I'm not totally going that these are going to be players playing in a major tournament in a few years' time. They may well end up in a friendly or two. I shadow you two quite a lot in what I'm saying. I think Jack Butland will end up probably as England's number two at some point, whether he breaks against Joe Hart. He remains to be seen. I know he's got a good few years on him, but I think this all depends on whether Joe Hart peaks early, in the sense that obviously he's been playing very well for quite a few years. We know he's at the top of his game, But at the same time, is he going to carry that form through into his 30s, his mid-30s, and keep going? I doubt it. I don't think he can keep at the top of your game for that long. Birth certificate peaking, I think it's called, or something like that. And you go on from there, I think John Stones, I think Tom's right. I think he's probably going to be the next Rio Ferdinand. He's a very talented youngster. I think he's got a lot of time ahead of him. And I think sort of that defensive line for England, I think there's going to be quite a few chops and changes. Probably 2018, especially 2022, to try and find that right partnership, as we did after Ferdinand and Terry retired. Michael Keane I've put down. I think he'll be very much the same. I think one good season
really?
For Burnley.
I've got him in my no chance column.
Well, for me, one good season for Burnley will put him up there. You know, he's a talented youngster. Yes, he hasn't made it right at Manchester United in a time where they were crying out for any kind of defenders. I think I might have got a trial at that rate. But, yeah, I just think that, you know, he's got a bit of time ahead, and I think that he could do quite well. Going on from that, I've got Callum Chambers. Nathan Redmond, we've all picked up on him. I think he's an absolute talent, and I think he will absolutely take the Premier League by storm next season. He's going to be one of those Charlie Austin, Danny Ings type players that we all know are going to get snapped up after a season. Harry Kane there for obvious reasons. Put Danny Ings, I think he'll probably get a few games. I think that's probably just going to be one of those where he's sort of brought in for a few friendlies, see how he runs. And the same as Tom, Benikofobe.
So we all think then plenty of players. I mean, I would say about half those players will play for England at some point. Yourself as well, Danny, you'd agree with me and Tom?
Yeah, none of these really stand out at me. Well, apart from Harry Kane, that are going to definitely be part of the England setup.
Big stars.
Yeah, I think most of them will end up sort of, if they're, you know, in the squad that they take to the World Cup, or maybe they're brought in to replace one of the players. But, you know, it's still early days and anything can happen, especially when you look at some of these players that, you know, might be playing in the Premier League for the first time, getting the first starts next season. And as we know by Harry Kane, you know, if a player's out of form and you bring a youngster in and they have that fire, they can really take a league by storm.
The Bigger Picture with Billy Banks on Radio Yorkshire.
Move swiftly on to some rugby league, and the Salford Red Devils have been the talk of the Super League in recent weeks, but not necessarily for matters on the pitch. Allegations of players not being paid and disputes with the council have flooded the internet, and owner Marwan Kukash decided to put it all to bed in a press conference earlier today. But that wasn't all. The doctor also announced a new acquisition for the club.
I would like to confirm that the club have agreed to appoint Tim Sheens as the director of rugby. Tim will be arriving here hopefully within a week or so. And with Tim's experience, he will help the club in many ways. And the way I want to work, I want to start working on youth, invest in youth, and more importantly as well, I need Tim's help to make sure whoever we recruit, it's we're recruiting the right people to this club. It's not all about names, it's about people who will really honor their contract and do their best for the club, and not just happy to take money. That's not what we want. We want players who will play for the shirt and be proud to wear the shirt.
Someone furiously typing in the background there, and Kukash seemed to be taking a bit of a swipe at some of the players who have been taking the money, being paid a lot of money to be at the club, and not quite putting the effort in. They're way down the Super League table at the moment. They should be much higher with the players they've got in terms of ability. But as we've seen in rugby league with teams like Castleford, if it's not there in the heart, you're not going to put those performances in and get those points. For those who don't know, by the way, Tim Sheens, he's the Australian international coach. He won the 2013 World Cup, so his stock's pretty high, got some great credentials. And after addressing the mass media, Marwan Kukash joined Otis Holmes.
You know, he came over here a couple of months ago and he spent a month with us, and he was great. You know, he knows his stuff, and he will act in the role of a director of rugby, work alongside Justin, will help us, help the club, you know, in the recruitment and in the development of a youth structure.
And which area do you think he's going to be most beneficial?
Well, look, he's very, very experienced in all areas with rugby, but his knowledge of the players back there in Australia is going to be, you know, a great benefit to us. Don't always go on the reputation, you know. He knows them inside out, and he knows the right people that we are after. And hopefully he'll add, that's his greatest, would be his greatest contribution. But to have him around the dressing room, players will always respect that sort of figurehead. And, you know, when we go out and start recruiting young players to come to our academy, they're always going to be impressed by having somebody like Tim Sheens around.
So it kind of goes hand in hand with this marquee player role now?
It does, really. And listen, I'm sure between him and Yeston, there's a number of marquee players that they could be, you know, they have in mind. And, you know, I'm sure once he arrives, they'll start looking at that shopping list and narrow it down, eventually come up with the right one.
Again, for you to have pushed so hard for this, you must have had some players in mind. Who's caught your eyes?
Quite a lot of them, mate. I'm not going to give you any names, so don't try.
Gabriel, and moving back to the marquee player rule, some people have criticised it and said that the money would have been better spent bringing back a reserve grade. What would be your response to that?
Well, look, I mean, there is, if you could afford to do both, why not? Okay, it's not saying, you know, do the marquee player at the expense of a reserve grade or at the expense of investing in youth. You could still do both. The regulations of a marquee player doesn't mean that if you invested in a marquee player, you can't still invest in youth or reserve grade. You could do both.
It must be incredibly difficult with all these things going on off field. What are your aims still for Salford for the rest of the season?
Listen, I'm a realistic person, and we're not going to make the top eight. And for us, you know, the best outcome for this season is to have a strong middle eight and to compete well and to come out on the top there.
Okay, and like moving on, and you've mentioned a lot about the youth development and things like that. Do you think that's something you should have focused on earlier on, or is it kind of a trial situation?
I think, you know, we had an injury crisis this year, and it cost us. But the one lesson I've learned from it is that when you have an injury crisis like that, your academy should be supplying you with players. And when we looked at our academy, we didn't have enough there quality. And straight away, you know, when you have to go to clubs like Wigan and ask for players who are playing their academy, you start thinking, why don't we have the same setup? And that's when you start realizing there's something missing there.
When this is all going on, was there ever a temptation to go to another club or to pull the plug?
No, I'm quite happy where I am.
And you've tried a lot of various tactics and things like that to get people in. Is there ever a frustration with the crowd?
Of course, listen, you know, of course, I'm frustrated about the crowd, but I think my next initiative, which is for the Catalan game, it's free, and really I would be disappointed if we don't get between 8,000 and 9,000 people.
The Bigger Picture with Billy Banks on Radio Yorkshire.
Right, we're going to move on to a part of the show that is tentatively titled Defend the Stupid Statements. We've done it for the last few weeks with mixed results. Danny started off well, was rubbish last week.
Yep.
So hopefully, a bit like Manchester City, they sort of a good one season, rubbish the next, good one season, rubbish the next. So hopefully we'll be better this week.
Or Leicester, do brilliant by beating Manchester United, do nothing for quite a while, then cut that firing.
And Tom's always consistently good at this.
Until now.
For that reason, I'm going to let you go first. My China mug with my little bits of screwed up paper in there. Six stupid comments. We've all got 30 seconds to defend them. Tom, reach over and pick one.
He's
stood up.
Now.
He really means business.
Right, okay, here we go.
You look forward to this part of the show, don't you?
I enjoy this part, if I know it. Burnley's Kieran Trippier signing for Spurs will be this season's most exciting transfer.
30 seconds to defend that stupid statement.
You want consistency. You want someone who is going to deliver week in, week out, Kieran Trippier. Forget the likes of Mario Balotelli that will deliver a flick and maybe get a goal once a season. Kieran Trippier is going to get you at least more than one goal. He'll get you assists, he'll tackle people, and you know what? He'll be the person that's going to help Tottenham get into that top four. He's the kind of signing everyone wants and no one can have. Well, you can if you offered the £3.5 million value from the most exciting transfer of the season, Kieran Trippier.
So value equal exciting
yes.
for you, Tom. Very well done. With trepidation, I pass the mug over to Danny
Parkinson. I do. He always sets such a high bar, does Tom.
He does well, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Well, I've tried both approaches. I've tried you going first. I've tried you going second. He's opening the paper. What have you got?
Ah! The 2024 Olympics should be held in Yorkshire, not Paris or Budapest.
So that's after the news that both Paris and Budapest have popped in bids for the Olympic and Paralympic Games in 2024. Danny, 30 seconds.
A region by itself that managed to generate and become eighth in the gold medals and medals table in the last Olympics. We've got beautiful scenery, beautiful tea shops. Everything here is gold. We've got, you know, if you want to talk to someone at a bus stop, fine. I won't talk to anyone at any bus stops in either of those two countries. You don't even need to renew your passport to go out anywhere. If it's not in Yorkshire, it ain't worth visiting. There we go.
Very good use of there you go to fill the last 15 seconds. I thought you might bring something up like the Tour de France or the Tour de Yorkshire. That would have helped your cause no end.
I agree. And the problem was, why I said there you go is I misjudged the theme. I thought it ended and it didn't end.
I think a bit like Blackpool a few seasons ago. You started off well, but failed miserably by the end.
All right.
My turn. I'm starting to dread this because, you know, I have to carry a radio show and open a piece of paper all at the same time. It's very difficult. Wow. Right, oh, it's a long one. Okay. Well, this is linked to something we were talking about earlier in the show. Sports video games really are a legitimate form of exercise. One in four children are correct. Okay.
Here we go.
Okay, 30 seconds starts now. Well, people have criticised the Nintendo Wii and games like that. You can play things like snowboarding on it, Tiger Woods and tennis. Now, what happens is that you can just sit on the sofa and flick your wrist and you can just knock the ball about and things like that, or snowboard. However, if you try playing that with your friends with the male competitive streak, it's impossible. You have to get up, you have to be hitting those proper shots, you're burning calories, and that's why I think that these games really are actual exercise.
Nice gap between the end and actual exercise.
That was like one of those news bulletins, wasn't it, where they could fill the last few seconds. I thought it did okay there.
Yeah,
okay, moving on. Tom, you're back.
Here we go.
You're the clubhouse leader at the moment on this. Reach over, your second stupid statement.
Here we go. Right, just open it up.
Like Christmas morning. Mm-hmm.
Australia are too old to win the Ashes this summer.
This is linked to Yorkshire's head coach Jason Gillespie saying that they were like Dad's Army, the Australian cricket squad, heading into the Ashes. Tom, your 30 seconds starts now.
Well, Australia are too old to win the Ashes this summer. When you're facing the likes of Yorkshire's Joe Root, that young gun, that guy with all the energy, he'll be hitting the sixes and fours left, right and centre. While Australia, you've got Michael Clarke, who after a couple of overs is feeling a little tired. He wants to be out because, you know what, it's past his bedtime. At the end of the day for England, they're the young guns. They're the team that are going to win the Ashes. They're going to win it 5-0. Why not? Because Australia, you know what, they're going to come over here. They're going to be a bit tired, a bit old. Get out.
That's perfectly okay. Timed as well.
That's very good.
A lot of charm and charisma in that.
Are you a regular Countdown viewer? Danny, come on.
Yeah, right, here we go.
You did well last time.
Okay. I just need to follow it up now.
In the meantime, I'll tell everyone that New Zealand are 82 for 2 and they need 110 off 78 balls to beat England. The run rate slowed down slightly after an epic start. We'll keep you updated. Danny, what have you got?
British tennis players, whose name is not Andy Murray, should just give up now.
OK, 30 seconds.
Couldn't agree more with this one. Try a different sport. Your time is over. It's not too late to switch. There are other sports with bats in them. But let's face it, Andy Murray will already have the captaincy of Question of Sport coming up when he retires. He will be the pundit when Wimbledon's back on. He'll take all the major columns in all the rest of the newspapers. So there isn't much point. He'll also win everything. You're not even going to get a byline at the end of a news bulletin. So just give up now and take up a different sport.
There we go. I was just going to say, because they're all rubbish.
Yeah. That's what I said, just needed to expand on it.
Very good. Much better this week, Danny. But that means that next week you're going to be rubbish again.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, we don't know yet. We'll work out the form soon.
One more to go. Okay. So, and I've got the final one. I've just opened it there. My final one is, Brett Ferris should not be banned for punching Rhys Hanbury in Huddersfield's Super League win over Widnes on Sunday. This is going to be pretty difficult.
Mm.
Okay, 30 seconds starts now. Look, in the heat of the moment, violence can occur in any sport. Rugby league's no different. It's played, at a high velocity. Now, we see in the Premier League and in football, players getting sent off for a little tap, a little kick, a little tap here and there, and it's not what I want to see. Brett Ferris absolutely laid Rhys Hanbury out. He was down on the deck for ages. If you're going to be violent on a football pitch, if you're going to do something stupid, do it properly. Knock someone flat out on the back. That's what Brett Ferris did. He shouldn't be banned.
That was poor, Bill. That was bad.
Why was that poor?
Well, number one, we see rugby players getting sent off for tapping people.
A football players, I said. Football players.
And also, he said football pitch when he said Brett Ferris. And also, there was a big gap again.
Keep this calm. That's listening to Radio Yorkshire.